Good morning. And I'm going to talk about the auto particle. So like AD and Chair said, we probably, a lot of us are spending a lot of time on extensions. We have so many extensions. On the other hand, we're slightly behind in terms of auto particle. And the goal today and also in the next few days is to all work together and let's push the auto particle-based protocol out. So therefore, we can focus on the extensions. Okay, next. So this is auto protocol, and right now the current version is 14. And we also have an internal version, essentially it would be 15, and we have not pushed out. It's been around for a few days now. But we decided not to just push out because we want you to read the current published version, and we're going to push out version 15 as soon as the OETF is over. So here's our outline of today. And first, I'm going to talk about extensions, the changes from 13 to 14. And then I'm going to talk about additional changes we have already done, essentially from 14 to 15. We do have a couple issues, remaining outstanding issues we want to discuss, and we want hope to spend the remaining time to really solve all the issues. Okay, next slide, please. So here is the changes from 13 to 14. And as Martin and the chair said, it has gone through the working group and AD reviews and all the reviews. So therefore, we have a lot of reviews. And one thing we did was the first change, probably only structural, but actually important, is we did a structural change. We split a single section, which is section 6 of version 13, to multiple sections, 3 actually here. And now we have general sections, section 7, which is general processing. And another section on basic auto data types. Another section on service information resources. We split one into three. The intention is to show that we want to extract the common structure out. Because we're anticipating there are so many proposals on extensions, we want to show the first one essentially generic. It doesn't depend on the specific information resources. So that's why we did all the changes. So that's a structural change. A second change we did is we essentially tried to collect all the IA and AA considerations together. So therefore, what we did was now there are 3 tables to summarize the request to IA and AA. And table 1 is summarize all the cost types we're going to eventually request to register with IA and AA. And second one is a table to summarize endpoint properties. At this moment, there's only one, but we anticipate a lot of them. So therefore, that's a second table. And third table we added is to summarize address types. Right now, of course, probably IPv4 and IPv6. And we can already see multiple requests to extend. So therefore, they probably would be, for example, MAC address and so on. But they haven't been added yet. Next slide, please. Here are some additional changes. And we define the meaning of that 2 version tags match. And how it really means, essentially, it's sequential comparison. That's an AD question raised by Martin, so we'll fix it. We also add a sentence to talk about potentially collision probabilities, essentially, to give some guidance over there. We added that an auto server must define the PID endpoint property. That's the only one we define. And also, we said if a client requests, the PID property, endpoint property, and the version tag of cruising map must be included. That's all. And then, of course, we need to fix the example in section 9.3, 9.16, and that's fixed. And then we added we added a constraint on cost type for identifier with the private or experimental prefix, an additional string, must follow to reduce potential collisions, and for example, a short string after experiment indicate the start time, and so on. It's recommended to reduce the potential of collisions. Okay, and then we revise discussion on host with multiple endpoint addresses. We added a suggestion on possibility of a monitoring service. Renato.
Well, the third bullet there, added a constraint, et cetera, et cetera. I think that we need to be a little bit more specific on what this string looks like, right? If you say example, company identifier, or random string, or it's like an example. I can choose whatever. My concept of random string might be to use the enterprise identifier in the IANA registration for each company and find each day for a different string, right? I mean, we need to understand exactly what do you mean by, how do you make it unique, right? a concept of uniqueness might be different from somebody else. So my suggestion is to use the enterprise number, the IANA, from the IANA registry, right? So if I'm company foo, I use my enterprise ID number, right? Otherwise, I mean, how do you reduce collision, right? I can choose the date of today. I can choose number one. I mean,
sure. And so right now, current wording, for example, will be start time. And potentially, of course, two companies or two terms start very similar. Simultaneously, you're going to have a collision.
I'm not sure. You can go to a bake-off and everybody uses the same time.
Right, that's true. Go ahead.
So Martin Stimmerling, since I raised this about the point, I think it's a good point that there needs to be some better thing how you can distinguish different entries, because there might be companies who just share the same short name or so and choose it. So I think we should add it to the draft. That's probably a really good point.
Yeah, good point. So basically, we probably should add something, but recommended. We are not enforcing any way because this is just recommendation. Another comment on this point. Good point. Okay, next slide. So here are three items, and they were items raised during our last IETF, and we had some discussions. Some discussions are public on the mailing list, and other discussions are actually privately. So here, let me go over one by one, and let's make sure that those are really the consensus that we have reached. Number one is item specified behaviors of degenerative map filtering service. And essentially, we discussed there are two options. One is degenerate into an empty, meaning, okay, for example, like in SQL semantics, and if you don't specify, meaning if semantics is in this set, that means the map should be empty. The current wording in the document already is to say no, it's actually degenerate into complete map. So essentially here's just empty means full or means no constraint or empty means. You can get anything. The consensus, we talked to quite a few people, and would be there's no strong objection if default to empty means complete. Just basically no constraint. Of course, you can argue the other way, which is so long as we agree, and that's okay. So therefore, the consensus is no objection to default complete map. The current revision is already in section 14.1.1 of -14 protocol. We added this classification, and we also mentioned that the operator should be very careful and to talk about, for example, this potential can become an operational issue. Questions? Comments on this issue? Okay, so no comment. We declare we reach a consensus on this item. And next item is endpoint property. And the discussion was, how do we manage this one? Can we be a little bit more specific? And the consensus is we're going to introduce an endpoint property registry. So therefore, the revision is we already have a table 4 in protocol version 14. So we're going to proceed from here. Questions? Comments? Okay, good. And next one is unifying cost mode and cost type to a single type. And this one generated a lot of discussions. And people have very strong opinions at the very beginning from multiple ways and so on. And because you really can argue multiple ways for this one, should unify them or you shouldn't unify them. And what happened is eventually we decided is we are not going to unify the cost mode and the cost type in certain sense. But we have decided actually to propose a combination. So in between, which we feel that would be cleaner and easier to read. So essentially, we take an approach that cost mode and cost type are still separate. But somehow, in terms of syntax, we add some sugar to remove some ambiguity. So next slide, please. Next slide will give you the detail. So here's what we did. And what we did is to decide to introduce a new type in JSON. And new type name is called cost ID. If you don't like the name of cost ID, please do recommend a new name. And currently, we call it cost ID. The cost ID is an object and would consist of two members. One is called mode and one is called type. And mode is still the type of cost mode and type still the type of cost type. So we still use old type and cost type, mode cost type. We don't change them. They're still separate. But now we introduce a new mode, new type called cost ID. And essentially this one would introduce a syntax sugar to really combine it together so therefore they appear as a single metric. Okay, what's mode, and what's a type. So next example, please. Let me just clarify what it looks like. Here is what would change after this one. And here is an example of IRD, and is Information Resource Directory. So what happens is following, look at the top, and we have announcement of capabilities in the old version. We're going to announce capabilities for this custom app, and you're going to announce cost mode and equal numerical array. And for the cost type, you're going to be equal to routing cost array, and equal to an array, and here, for example, will be routing cost. And now with a newer version, which is below, I now introduce a member called cost ID. And here is, actually now we're going to limit custom map to only one type. We are not going to allow you, cost ID, we're not going to allow you to have other combinations. And now you will see is cost ID now will become single cost type essentially, and now the mode is numerical and type equal to routing cost. Clean and still single object, very clean. We're not changing any semantics and everything else changes, only syntax-wise combined together. And actually, this one would also make our life a bit easier to solve a potential ambiguity we had previously. So if you look at IRD for the endpoint cost IRD, of course, I can also show an example of filtered map, cost map IRD as well. So in the old style, and the specification would be cost mode equal to, would have two types, ordinal and numerical, and cost types equal to routing cost and hop count. So in the previous example, you might have four types, combinations. Essentially, they really imply somehow be you can have ordinal and hop routing cost, ordinal hop count, and numerical routing cost, and numerical hop count. And they may or may not all of the combinations will be available because that's a central combination problem. But now with a newer type, now it's pretty simple. So for all these cost maps and the filtering, and now you can have a cost ID array. This array would enumerate all the combinations allowed. For example, for this case, and would allow only three, and routing calls, you can support both ordinal and numerical, and for hop count, somehow decide you're not going to reveal about your hop count's really exact value, and you just reveal ordinal type. So very clean, very easy change, and all the existing implementation would involve just very, very minor change. They just need really to put the cost and mode into a single object instead of separate. Otherwise, it's a very clean change. Questions? Okay, I don't know if I have another example.
The issue here is with the name that is really not an identifier, right? Cost ID is not an ID.
It's not ID, and this became motivated by the proposal by Wendy, and eventually we decide if we call the map, we already have type inside. I don't know if people would come up with a better name. This name essentially is a peer, and to include the mode and type, we don't have a better name. This moment, we're going to call it a cost ID. Because eventually we might have intention to introduce cost ID in a global registry, but at this moment, we are decide not going to do it. And in a program language point of view, those are just anonymous objects. We don't want to introduce a change where we really give an ID now where all objects will have names. Imagine essentially, for example, cost IDs here would have three objects in a program language point of view, and we don't assign names at this moment. We don't want to because that means a major change relatively. I don't have a good name. So far we call it cost ID, but if people come with a better name, we'll be more than happy to change. Go ahead, Michael.
Metrics. So what about metric?
Cost metric?
Either type.
Type already have type inside. So
yeah. If you change the type to metric, then you could call the whole thing cost type.
Oh, that means we break a little bit more things, but probably can be an easy change because we want not to change the type. So your suggestion is cost ID now becomes cost type.
Yeah, for example.
And internally, the type becomes a metric.
Just one suggestion. I don't have a strong preference.
I think I'm fine with that, actually.
Jan Zedov. So if I understand this correctly, it's about what is supported by the server, right?
It's what's supported by the server, what combinations.
So why not call it something like allowed, supported, or something?
Supported is not only supported, eventually actually for the customer. I'm going to show you one example. It also will show you exactly the metric. So this one would indicate here, so of course this IRD only indicate what's supported. How do I show you the rest of the slides, and then we go back to the customer name again. Good. Can you go next slide? I'll show the example. How I use it. Here is how we use it. For example, for the cosmic example request. And the client requests a cosmic. So therefore, return becomes cos ID and mode numerical type routing cos. You know, in the previous version, they're separate. It's a cos mode numerical cos type routing cos. And now they combine into a single one. And then the rest will just stay. So not only requested, but can be indicate the cost. So I'm fine with just call it the cost, cost ID, the cost type, and move type to metric. But that means we also need to change the registry table to call metric as well. But those are all very quick, just like people with implementations go back and change their code probably in 5 minutes. Any other items? Any other question on this item? We want to solve it for all.
Well, let's do this. I mean, I think what Michael suggests is reasonable, and unless we hear otherwise from people on the list, we'll just go with it, call it cost type, and change the identifier to metric and be done.
The other way, I think. Cost ID now is named cost type.
Cost type, right.
And type now change to metric.
Yep. And then if there's no objections on the list about this, we consider it closed, and that's it.
Right. Of course, then the cost type probably in the data type currently. Can you go back like two slides? One, two, and now essentially here the definition would be cost mode stay the same and cost type becomes cost metric. Mm-hmm. And now cost ID becomes cost type. And of course the table we change to metric, and so everything will be changed consistently. And then we're done with it. Because we do have quite a few implementations that we need to make sure we don't want to cause all this trouble. Okay, no objections, discussions? Good. Great. Okay, and here's one which would cause a lot of discussions. Even there's one discussion last night and yesterday. It's about a security section. So what you should support, and actually it's a bigger context about security considerations. And the current wording is auto server must support SSL/TLS to implement server and or client authentication. And the proposed change this moment actually is a lot more, and because also suggestions from Hannes and from Sebastian talking about the security section. So last night we wrote one version which completely restructured the security considerations. And this is a really new version. We do want to get a lot of feedback. 1 minute. And how I just like Jan to first comment first.
No, Jan Zedov. So I used to contribute to the security sections a long time ago, and at that time the protocol wasn't evolved as it is. So I actually want to say that I agree with Sebastian's comment of restructuring it, and the restructuring he proposed I think is a good way forward, and I'm willing to contribute to that restructuring as well. I just didn't have the time during the week here, but I think it's a good way forward. So I support the proposal from Sebastian.
Great. Yeah, and I also support that. If you have time, read the email we sent out last night, probably very late. You probably don't have time to read. I think you read already. Essentially, it's following the structure proposed by Sebastian, and the only thing is we added a lot. And Sebastian's suggestion is to have three sections, authenticity, integrity in one section, and then talking about the confidentiality in section, and then talking about availability in one subsection. And then we also add a section about like misleading information or user protection for users, so section 4. So that's a complete new section. And we do recommend people to read, and we post already, even though we understand we probably should wait a couple more days to post it, but we decide to take action as soon as possible. That's why we posted last night. So we do seek comments as soon as possible. There, and the major, not only in terms of structural changes, they reorganize much better. I think I really like the new structure of Sebastian. And there's also two technical content which we need to settle. The first one will be the server authentication and what server should support. I think eventually I'll decide is auto server must support both HTTP and HTTPS. With all the implied complexity. Basically means, for example, server certificates and so on to really authenticate the server. And then, of course, integrity and commonality will be all implemented using HTTPS. That's part we're going to do already, and it's in the wording in the new text. And the only remaining issue is client authentication. How do we do that? So current design in the current wording is the following, and we say the client, if you really have to implement a client authentication, and you must support HTTP digest authentication for the client, or otherwise, I think that wording is not really put over in the new text yet because we don't have agreement from you guys, is do we want to say client can also use a client certificate to really prove who they are? So any comments here will be great so that we can move forward to close this issue. Comments? So let me summarize what we propose. And the text we already fixed, and I think most will agree. And the issue would be the wording, an auto server must support both HTTP and HTTPS. The second wording is, if client authentication is required, then the protocol must support either HTTP digest or client certificate.
Richard, I have a question.
Go ahead.
As if it was from the floor. So does the last bullet intentionally mean to rule out like HTTP basic authentication over HTTPS?
We don't want to allow basic authentication because
HTTPS.
That's too weak. Over HTTPS, that's too weak. So therefore, we say only digest or client certificate. Of course, people could still use basic in a real, because we do support HTTPS, they could in a real case. But for protocol-wise, we don't allow this.
So you're suggesting that non-compliant...
Non-compliant could use basic.
Still use it.
A non-compliant server deployment, but the compliant one means digest or client certificate. Any comments? This is a major issue we want to close today.
Is everyone fine with this? Do people understand the implications?
Or probably should ask if
we should probably, Richard, start a new thread on the list, make it very
mailing
clear
list.
What, on a mailing list, yes.
Okay.
And give people time to think about it.
Yeah, so if you questions and talk to me, and of course we'll bring the issue to the mailing list. So far we don't seem to have objection here. They seem to be standard practice. Vijay.
Yeah, Vijay Kripani as individual. I think we have hashed this issue on the list, and I think there seems to be an agreement that if we just go with either HTTP or HTTPS, we are going to make some camp say that we need the other one.
Okay.
So it seems reasonable to provide HTTP, HTTPS, and there's enough deployment experience on using HTTP Digest and using TLS client certificates, and TLS already has the basics of querying the client if you have certificates. So all these are operational issues that people know already.
Yes.
So I really don't think we need to hash this issue any more than is needed.
Okay.
And I would, in fact, say that if people do not like what's said here, post to the list. Otherwise, we go with this, period.
Okay. That sounds a good approach. Okay. So that's agreement? Good. Okay. Next one.
Richard says that one thing we chatted up on the email for cost ID was to have a lookup table inside of the IRD. So it would be an opaque identifier in the IRD which maps to the cost type, cost metric, cost mode.
Inside IRD. So that's a... I'm not sure I fully understand what exactly...
So let me read his comment and see if it makes sense again. Mm-hmm. One thing we chatted about via email for cost ID was to have a lookup table inside the IRD, inside the information resource
yes.
directory.
Let's call it global identifier right. table.
Mm-hmm. So it would be an opaque identifier in the IRD which maps to a tuple, cost type, cost metric, and cost mode.
Okay,
so I suspect, Richard, maybe you might want to open up a thread just to make sure everybody's okay on this.
Sure, because that one would involve adding a table to look up, and we can open this one, but otherwise we just go with a simple one. Step one is name list objects, and then step two would be add the identifier. Okay, good. So can we go to the next one? Here's another item which we need feedback. We need a decision here. And here's the issue is the following. So the current wording is an auto client must interpret both HTTP status code and auto error codes. And if auto error code indicates an error, an auto client should consider that the request has failed. So now the question here is the following. So the setting we follow, there are four cases. So we have auto on top of HTTP. And HTTP would say, okay, 200, or would say something, not 200. 1 second, let me finish. And so HTTP will say 200 or non-200. And auto can say 200 or non-200. So that's really classified 200 or non-200. So there will be four combinations. If both auto HTTP said, okay, great, we're fine. We have no problem whatsoever. If they both said error, and then, of course, the request failed, and then we have error. So now the interesting case, probably interesting case, will be the two other cases. One is, probably easier case would be the HTTP will say, okay, 200. And now error, and auto will see error. So that's probably easy case, and the auto client would read the auto code that, okay, it's wrong. So which means concepts right, essentially like TCP is correct, transport layer, and on top, the application layer says something wrong, and then auto would understand. Probably only tricky case a little bit to really understand is, it could happen that HTTP will say error. For example, congested or redirect or some other return code. And then auto will be say okay, because auto applications are on top and using a transport layer, essentially HTTP, and wouldn't know something's wrong. So that's a case which we haven't reached fully agreement on how to proceed. Renato already eager to give a comment. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was the one that suggested to change this, right? So the way I view this is very simple, right? If you're writing, we're using HTTP, HTTPS transport. If, let's say, I'm an application developer, I went through this exercise, and I'm writing an application on top of TCP, right? And I'm sitting on a socket, right? The socket tells me -1 if something went wrong, or tells me the bytes that it read. The socket is not telling me the application, hey, can you look at this SAC option and look at every single thing here and find out what's wrong? Hey, can you inspect why does TCP CRC computation went wrong? And please help me here, right? The application doesn't want to care about that. Now, if you want a simple critical mass of people doing auto clients, this seems to me like you're asking auto client developers to understand HTTP, status codes and error codes, right? If I have a library, right, HTTP is a transport, auto is on top of it. Now, the cases that you indicated that are tricky, it's tricky because we put ourselves in a position to be tricky, mm-hmm. right? If HTTP says it's an error, it stops there. Just like if a socket says it's an error, it stops there. If a socket returns you -1, you're going to say, hey, but give me the buffer anyway. I want to do something with it, right?
So the tricky case will be falling. So analogy with TCP goes as far as it can. And the problems for TCP, there's something wrong, and TCP wouldn't return the data. Here, the funny thing potentially could happen would be HTTP would say, I'm congested. Server overloaded, 500.504, I believe. And then the auto client wouldn't know about it, and the central auto client might still get the data okay. So therefore, for that case, I think that's a good point. And what you're saying is, should auto client realize, actually transport layer congested and server overloaded, so therefore auto should back off to send the next request. Or could concept we can understand would be the behavior, really correct behavior should be that the HTTP transport layer library should really back off.
Yes.
So here, of course, and layer, I think I better argument that from layer point of view, and probably this one should still wouldn't, we should ask auto client to retrieve, for example, 504, and now understand, okay, as auto client, I shouldn't send it, and probably even in hierarchy wise, if, for example, auto client wouldn't know about it, still send a new request, and the library should back off and buffer it, for example.
Yes.
That's probably a correct layer behavior.
Yes, otherwise it smells like layer violation. You're asking something on top of other to understand the intricacies of the protocol underneath it. Right. Oh, it's 303. Oh, then I need to do this. It's 200. Oh, that's okay. Oh, it's 404. Oh, let me do this. Right. So I don't think this is a very clean design. Right. I think it's if you want even to, it's fine to say HTTP has an error, you create a similar error on the outer layer, right? To say,
but that's a request for the HTTP library. Probably we cannot do that.
Yes. So that's where I'm coming from. It's very simple. We even make the protocol simpler because now an auto client developer doesn't need to bother about HTTP status codes, reason codes, and what exactly do they mean. Otherwise, he needs to bother about it, right? He needs to understand this stuff. Anyway,
so basically means the request now changes to let me understand. So let's really see the richer consensus. So Renato's proposal is an auto client must only interpret auto error code. We just ignore HTTP code and leave all the stuff to the HTTP library. They need a backup, and if there's redirect that's handled transparently by them, just like TCP and everything else, we just remove.
Yes, very simple, very clean, yes.
So that's the proposal. Any discussions on this item? So I presume we can, of course, we can also discuss this one on the mailing list, but we do want to get a feeling of people here present because it's a real-time feedback. Okay, so if there are no objections, we're going to move on to only essentially pretend HP, really analogy HTTP as a transport layer and auto as the application layer. We're not going to look into the error code from the transport layer unless they really tell us. Otherwise, we don't know. We don't know if they're consistent or not. Okay, go ahead. Good. Next slide. That's the last one, and we're going to change. So I believe the last one we're going to change is to revision of the AutoJSON schema to allow easy parsing. So this is essentially syntax change. It wouldn't change any wire format because essentially for JSON and the wire format, data format can be ambiguous. You can have an array with A equal to B, A equal to A1 attribute 1, equal to V1 attribute 2, equal to V2, and it can really mean a hash table or can really mean, for example, an object and with two members. So it can be ambiguous in JSON, and we decided to change some of the format to allow easier implementation if they choose so. And of course, they may not use that particular schema. They can use schema interpreting multiple ways because that's the nature of JSON. It's ambiguous for deserialization. And we're going to post actually a combined overall schema for JSON to the mailing list to get feedback. And then, of course, they will be still in the real spec. It's still going to be mingled, I mean, spread out all over the document. But we'll probably eventually put the unified schema into a single place. Okay, comment, Martin.
Martin, Stimulink speaking as individual. So I'm asking myself, this is something, is there a bug right now in the JSON schema, or is this something like nice to have what we're doing right now?
You mean a bug or is something nice?
Yeah, does the current schema, is it not implementable, or?
It's the problem is the current schema is definitely implementable and can be implemented in multiple ways. Because basically it would be fun. I think that's the problem of JSON, and it would be, it's ambiguous.
Okay, you're trying to remove this ambiguity.
We want to give people one way to interpret it because then conceptually we thought about how to do the parsing. We realized if we give this interpretation and you don't need to really dynamic types if you're using, for example, JSON, GSON, the library, the Google JSON library, and so on. But it basically means at the source, you have one representation. The moment it goes to wire from and to the client, and the moment at the client side, you can ensemble it in two ways because ambiguous.
Okay, I see. Yeah. So, and I think the way we propose is good. Post it to the mail list so people can take a look on it.
Yes.
Because this could be a larger work item in the end if people disagree or so. But
okay. So we can definitely post this one and probably also be very useful. That I think there's an article, recent article talking about using JSON in IETF. Because also using probably this is the major application of protocol using JSON at the moment. So therefore, actually, we really have to invent and a few notations to really represent the schema in our context. So for example, base, polymorphism, and also all these some other notations. And they're pretty interesting stuff. So we're going to post, and we don't think there will be any potential issues. They're just only represent issues. People are still passing out in their other ways, but we think this is a better way to more unified way to give the schema.
Richard, comment from Richard Alimi on the error codes.
Okay.
He says, I fear that moving these error codes into Alto, example, just as HTTP 300 multiple choices, is going back on the consensus we got when doing the RESTful approach.
show multiple choices, because currently the IRD multiple choices return because a single URL might have because for example one delegation you might have multiple choices from that URL, and right now indicated by HTTP 303 instead of auto multiple choices. Can you ask him? One way to do proceed would be now the auto should return. We even for this one, oh, that's tricky. Okay, so the problem is the following. So let me just try to make the problem clear so that everyone understands what exactly is going on. So the current design is for the IRD, and when a client requests, okay, so let me understand. So for example, there's a particular information resource, a custom map, or there's some URL, and a client will send a request. For example, I'm one ISP, I delegate a part of a map into another ISP. So therefore, and from IRD, I got this URL, and then I'm a client, I send a request to that particular URL. That particular URL actually contains multiple information resources. The moment you request, and that server wouldn't know how to respond. So therefore, what happens is that server would give you an error, essentially says 303 multiple choices. Which map do you really want? And then what happens is then the client would issue an options to get the IRD back from everything and then can do it. So the current problem is falling would be this error currently, for example, the client requests for this URL and the error message somehow can only indicate it by HTTP, because why so is the client only indicates the client can only accept the particular, for example, the client asking for a custom map, so therefore only say I accept custom map. But actually, that URL might have a custom map and might also have a network map. And then the only way legitimately to really follow the protocol would be, and the server would return multiple choice from the transport layer. And then the client would request, and now would say, hey, now I really accept actually information directory. Because in the first round, the server cannot return information directory because the client doesn't indicate it can accept information resource directory. So that's why we use 303. So one way to really solve this problem is the following. We request that all the client be prepared or implicitly can accept information directory. So currently we request all the client should be able to, whenever you issue request, for example, you're asking for a custom map, you indicate you accept custom map, also you should indicate you should be able to accept error code. And now for these multiple choice cases, and they should be prepared to also accept information resource directory. And then we move this information multiple choices into the application layer. Would that be Richard?
Richard says that we could replicate these error codes in Alto, but I think the HTTP folks are not going to like that because it means that new HTTP status codes now need to be added to Alto as well.
We only need a particular one, 303. Can we just handle this particular case because we need to indicate essentially redirection, delegation? Would that be okay?
Richard? I suspect that, let's see what Richard says, but it might very well worth be taking this to the list.
Looks like so. Go ahead, Fernando.
Yeah, I will. I'm not going to continue too much on this item, but again, this is not new, right?
Transport layer, yes. Cross layer violation stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's again, we put ourselves in this situation, right? I mean, there are multiple errors that can happen with TCP, UDP, and other protocols, right? So you want to debug this specific situation, the HTTP library needs to log something, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go look why you got a minus one in the auto client.
Sure.
Right. I mean, this is the way it's done, right? This is not. I mean, we're trying to force something to optimize something. By reaching into HTTP and trying to understand what this means, right? So this is a very slippery slope. Somebody's going to come with the next status HTTP that he finds interesting and say, oh no, now for this one here, I want you to understand as well it and do something special about it, right? Okay. And this is DHF has lots of experience on this, right?
Sure.
Right. I mean, many protocols, right? You return minus one above and you log it, and that's how you debug those things, right? Mm-hmm. You don't pass all this stuff all up. Otherwise, IP is going to say, hey, there's IP options here. Pass to the TCP. The TCP now cram all his error codes in it and pass to the application, right?
So, Ronaldo, are you saying that what is there currently today suffices and we shouldn't do anything else?
I'm saying auto client must interpret only auto error codes.
I tend to agree, and what I would recommend is for this particular case for multiple choices, and really the meaning actually different in the HPA 303 means multiple choices. And of course for us, that really means not only multiple choices, the probability error code really means, of course, could be 303, but really means, look, this one has multiple resources. So therefore, even semantics-wise, we can be more specific. So therefore, I think I'm fine personally put it up and put the option back to the application layer and indicate that code. Michael.
So I don't have a strong opinion on this right now, but I actually wanted to check this with our implementers because it really affects how you can interface the HTTP library, and I'm not personally familiar with this.
Okay.
But I think that this is an implementation issue in practice, how you interface the HTTP library, and it would be good to check this, how this could work in reality. So that it looks okay to separate the layers, but as I said, this in practice affects, for example, how you can interface the curl library. And I'm not personally familiar with this right now.
So probably should take it to the list. And personally, of course, probably can talk about opinions.
Right. Richard has one more thing he wants to relay. He says that I think it hurts extensibility for underlying HTTP. So let's take it to the list and discuss it in more detail.
Okay,
there.
Good.
Yeah, I would like to also point out that a client will not only interface with libraries, but also with HTTP auto unaware boxes like caching servers or load balancers, and they do interpret HTTP error codes. They do not. They cannot interpret auto codes. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. For that case, particularly, for example, for 303, and then if you interpret 303, it means really do an option and to get the new IRD. That's a semantic problem most cache servers wouldn't know anyway. So therefore, this really is auto specific here. You interpret 303. So I'm my current feeling, of course, I'm thinking on the feet, but I tend to go along with what Renato is saying, but we can take it to the mailing list. I think that's... Do we have more? I think that's all. Okay, so a lot of consensus and also a few items.
And again, I'm sorry, but I really would like people to take into consideration the issue with client authentication, and especially... I believe we must be very careful with the wording we use, like 2119 word, like must and should. And I'm pretty sure that if we write something like client authentication must be based on either HTTP digest or client certificates, mm-hmm. ruling out, for example, other authentication mechanisms, like some mechanisms that are being worked on in the ATF, in the security area.
Okay.
The HTTP... Our working group is working on it. Marty made it.
Must support, for example, at least one. You can have additional.
Must support,
for example, yes. Not must be only these two, and you pick one, for example. I guess
yes.
Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, I'm saying we really should not rule out.
We should disallow extension, for example. I guess that's what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Okay, I took out like. I only had 30 minutes, but it took us probably 45, 50 minutes. Okay, Martin.
You had 15 minutes before we moved to 30 minutes for you.
Okay, so we're better already.
It's a related question. Martin Stiemerling speaking, but it would be good for when the Broken Group submits the protocol for review, that you chairs probably ask the people you know about implementations, like, just to give a rough count of how many implementations we have. Because that's always good to say. It's not just an academic exercise, but we have people who implement this and ship in product, so it gives a bit more credibility to something. It's just like some remarks. Sure. Thank you.
Yeah, well, actually, in the Shepherd write-up, there was quite an extensive section about implementations and a recap of the two
It's just maybe updated after. So.